Digital 410 proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Henry Sledge.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. And we are back after a very long 2 weeks and a very nice Veterans Day weekend. And for all those veterans out there, I want to say happy Veterans Day. And for all those of you who enlisted but maybe only did 80 days of active duty and didn't get your veteran status, happy Veterans Day to you too. Didn't know that was a thing, but I learned that over the weekend. Speaking of veterans, speaking of nice guys, speaking of guys you want to hang out with and have a beer with, Mr. Jeff Copsetta, how are you doing today, Jeff? I can't talk.
I'm tired, but I'm here.
Me too. Me too. Oh, boy. It's been a long 2 weeks, so... Not this past week, but the weekend prior, I had the VKE event up in Parrish, Florida. The event that me, Paul, and Robert are going to be taking over next week. Next week. Yeah, that's all tied in. Next year, next November. So it'll be the first actual event that I have to have a substantial amount of organization participation involved with. Had a little bit back with the second anniversary of Tarawa. At least I was included in a lot of the behind-the-scenes Zoom meetings. I didn't do a whole hell of a lot other than sit in on meetings. But the good news is I remember back when I worked in radio, when the local radio station I worked at would put on concerts, and you'd be involved in some of that stuff. Because people don't realize that when you go to a concert in your town, if it's your radio station presents, that means they put the whole damn show on. Their producers, their station, they organize everything, and they brought the vendors in. If your radio station says, so-and-so radio station welcomes, that just means, hey, we have a relationship. They're giving us free tickets to give away. So that's the difference for those on the outside world. If it says presents, that means that organization put it together. If it says welcomes, that just means, hey, we want to get a little involved in this. So I'm going to be taking some of those past histories, plus running a business for 18 years and putting that together to continue this event. Because it's 20 years, 22 years, I believe, in the making. No, it's wow. Been 24 years, and the Art who's been running it for the last 15 has only missed one event. So it'll be fun, and so we're hoping to keep that going. First event I've been to since that same event last year, because Florida's just been kind of weird with our events. Of course, there was one last weekend and some coming up, but last weekend I was out of town on a bachelor party, but we'll talk about that maybe later. But you've had an exciting run. Seen some fantastic photos. So first and foremost, let's get to the Dallas event, but then let's talk a little bit about Veterans Day weekend and all that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk Dallas first. I think it's snow.
Your microphone's breaking
wings
up really
bad.
Your internet's breaking up really bad. Let's try it again.
Oh, man. How's it sound now?
Good for now. We'll see.
Okay. Well, sorry.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So a year ago, we all know tragic event happened at Wings Over Dallas. So kind of changed a lot of things for that community and those type of events.
I don't want to step on it, but we do have a lot of new listeners. And some of our new listeners may not be air show aficionados and may have no idea what happened a year ago. So let's kind of just give them the Reader's Digest of what happened so that when we discuss this, those new listeners won't feel left out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I apologize. I didn't mean to leave that out, but you know, it's something nobody really likes to talk about. So I'll give you a very brief, aircraft collided at an air show last year in Dallas. It took out a B-17 and a P-63. Very tragic event. Multiple lives lost, of course. Still, you know, the investigation is still ongoing. So if anybody wants to ask me, no, I don't know. but it happens. It's happened before. There's, you know, different protocols maybe to put in place, different ways to do things. And that's what the Commemorative Air Force is investigating now to move beyond this, right? Not to forget, but to continue forward, continue the mission and try to prevent something like this from happening again.
We're as a non-affiliated anything, just as a aeronautical enthusiast and a World War II fanatic as you are, where did you fall, or what was your opinion on those people who, after the tragedy came out, floated the idea that maybe it's time we ground all of that era warbirds instead of flying them around in a show capacity?
Man, that's a really complicated question, because, you know, my first instinct is to not ground them. But I also completely understand the other side of the coin. Hey, there's only so many of this type of aircraft left. The chances are, you know, they can't crash if they don't fly. So we know we can preserve the rest if they're grounded, they're a static display. What you lose there is kind of the, you know, in living history, I think we all probably say the same things at different events all over the country. You don't always remember the first time you see something under glass, but you certainly remember the first time you held it, you touched it, you felt how heavy it was. There was a tactile connection that leaves an impression. It's to see an airplane sitting on the ground is no different than looking at a tree. When an aircraft is cranking up, you see all of it coming to life, these complicated systems that were created so long ago, so efficiently.
And all analog. I mean, we're talking right. King analog.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and we talked about that, of course, over the weekend. You can't not talk about it. And, you know, folks travel in, you know, commercial airlines all the time, right? And, you know, you look at the difference of a commercial airline and, say, a C-47. A man can land a C-47. But if certain technologies go out in an Airbus, no man is going to fly by wire and, you know, actually put this thing on the ground.
Not only that, but a man can land a C-47 with 1.5 wings.
Right, exactly. There's no wing in a prayer, you know, in an MD-80 or something like that. So, but we trust this stuff all the time.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thought process too, because it's not just aviation. We have this in all sorts of vintage whatevers. You got the vintage motorcycle guys who, you know, they believe this bike was made to be ridden. I don't care if it's an early, you know, one of 300 Harley Davidsons or a Triumph or whatever, or some, the guys who do the vintage car racing where they're out racing cars from the 60s and 70s that are worth multi-millions. And there's people like, you've got the party of, hey, we need to preserve these things. And the more hardcore guys, like, these things have been made to be driven. You know, you're not doing them any justice with the quote unquote trailer queen. That's a phrase you'll hear in car shows. And so, regardless if it's Air Force, motorcycles, cars, boats, ping pong balls, or baseball cards, there's always two camps: the preserve it in plastic, and it was designed to be used. Let's use it for what its intended purposes are.
Yeah, and I tend to lean that way, and I'm no aficionado in aviation in any way, shape, or form. I just appreciate it, and I enjoy it. I enjoy being around it. And to me, there's no greater feeling of being an American for me than being at an air show, seeing these aircraft of all different eras in flight, and seeing these kids looking up, dreaming, thinking about what they want to be when they grow up, and kind of that passing the torch. If we just stop it to preserve it, it almost makes me think, and I think most of our listeners know by now I'm a huge Elvis fan. It just reminds me of something that he said. It's just very fitting, you know, when he was constantly ostracized by all the gyrations and movements on stage. He said, well, if I got up there and didn't move a muscle, well, my goodness, people can just sit at home and listen to the record.
Exactly.
You know, so that's what it was all about. It's about the experience. And so, you know, I don't want to enter an argument on something like that. If people say now is the time, or maybe there are certain aircraft that we should keep grounded, and maybe, you know, I don't know.
Well, the irony in preserving, the irony in the thought of grounding them to preserve them, you might as well put them in a private collection, because anybody who's done living history in a city where something happened and all of a sudden the weapons demo has been removed from the process, the attendance will drop, because people like loud noises, people like spectacles, and they like to see, hear, feel, and touch. And yes, there are plenty of good living history events that don't have the weapons demonstrations, but when you see them make that transition for the first few years and you don't have the sounds and the booms and the noise, there is a visual difference in attendance. And so if imagine trying to have an air show, quote unquote, preserving history and trying to preserve World War II history. Obviously, they got the modern jets as well. A lot of them, if they're not flying, that just means you're standing in line and getting a hangar. And a lot of people are already burnt out from standing in line waiting to get their elephant ears. And so you don't fly them, a lot of people, the attendance will drop. It's a sad truth of reality.
Yeah, and I think you also have to appreciate the fact that just because they're grounded doesn't mean they're being preserved. We saw that with the Memphis Belle sitting on Mud Island for decades, literally rotting. If grounding an aircraft and not having it fly for decades preserves it, then why did the Air Force Museum have to go through all of the process to restore that aircraft? Whereas if it's airworthy and you know people are going to be flying it and it has to perform and it has a schedule, it's going to be top-notch.
It's the difference between someone like Jay Leno having cars in a collection with a full-time mechanic staff to constantly lube them, change oils, turn them over, and somebody putting a car in their barn for 40 years and not doing anything with it. The one that's sitting untouched, opposite of what you would think, is actually going to fall apart because it's not getting the maintenance. Just like any real estate person will tell you, the worst thing you can do to a house or a building is to leave it empty. You would think, well, no wear and tear. Yeah, but it's also not being maintained. Planes, right. Yep, same thing.
Absolutely. So I love what the Commandment of Air Force has done with the program this year, as opposed to a full air show. They created an Aviation Discovery Fest, which was really geared towards children with different hands-on activities, STEM-related activities. All of my children were there, my children range from the age of 17 to 2. So my 17-year-old's walk around as a Pathfinder, right, with his display. And then my 2-year-old's in the hangar building paper rockets and my 4-year-old's coloring pictures of Rosie the Riveter. And,
that's awesome.
You know, my 12-year-old's just soaking it all in, going, oh, man, I have that and this. And so, I mean, it really was a really nice event. And, Don, I know you can appreciate it, too, because from, like, a reenactor living history perspective, you know air shows are – kind of difficult when you have a living history display because you are constantly competing and yeah. You may be in a great conversation with somebody. They're asked you about something on your table and you're in this deep conversation. And then all of a sudden there goes a P-51 and you're,
no, you're lucky if it's a P-51. I was going to ask you what's louder, an F-18 or an F-14. It's the jets that you really like. Okay. I'm going to wait till that passes over.
Right, yeah. So there's just awkward silence. You're just staring at each other, waiting for the sound.
And then what tends to happen at air shows, too, especially the bigger ones, is because of all the noise, the interactive booths try to enunciate. And so they got EDM music oompa, oompa, bouncing in the background, trying to play their stuff louder. And so it just, after a while, if you're in that vendor area, even because I've been to a few air shows where they put the living historians close to the vendor area. And so you're trying to talk over the airplanes, the techno music from 3 booths down and everything else going on. But it's a good time. It's just,
yeah,
you just got to present yourself and get that representation out there.
Right. But so this event was much different than that. This was a much more intimate event. Beautiful. Yeah, there was still the P-51. Fifi, the B-29, made 3 flights both Saturday and Sunday. Everybody's going to stop and gawk at that. Everybody kind of laughed. You know, you're seeing a P-51 zoom by or maybe an SNJ, and then all of a sudden the PT-19 goes up, and it's just like, like it's like,
Mommy, is that plane moving?
Yeah. But again, the way we were set up, I mean, I had 4 tables in my display and I was under the wing of a B-24.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, it could
history
have been,
and a shade. Been, what yeah, do you want?
Couldn't have been any better. So just like I said, an Aviation Discovery Fest, or I think some squadrons still like a ride-in fly-in where you've got aircraft come in for display. You've got
very cool
classic vehicles, military vehicles driving in. And then, you know, reenactors and different exhibits for kids to do. It's a great event. It's a great way to do it.
Where do you land on? I think it's kind of cool. It's a great way to revigorate the wayward longtime historian into maybe revamping their display if they care. But I didn't get to go to an event last weekend because I was in Tampa for a buddy's bachelor party. But the one of the German crews who was at the VKE, Kevin's little crew with Kevin Hunter, Justin, and Mike and a few other guys, they won the Zephyr Hills Living History Weekend's trophy for best living history display. And that's something, I guess, that particular event started about 3 or 4 years ago. I didn't even know it was a thing because I haven't been to that one. And I think it's kind of cool. I think it's something that maybe more places need to put on. Once again, it's just more for a, you know, the organizers to acknowledge the effort that the living historians put in. Because sometimes I think we feel a little, because the organizers and the event's so big, there's so much logistics going on, you know, sometimes you just kind of feel like you're there. But I think just something simple as just a little award from the organizers to one of, you know, somebody in the living historian displays, it's kind of not only a, hey, we appreciate you going all out and putting this up, but hey, we recognize all of you guys, and you know, we can't do this without you.
Cause that's a pretty neat idea.
Cause even though we all know the organizers need you there and they thank you for being there, sometimes, you know, just a little acknowledgement, which, you know, a nice box of donuts does the same thing, but I think it's cool to have, you know, to have somebody get a trophy or something that says, you know, excellent job. You know, you all did a great job, but out of all yours is, and it kind of makes you want to battle it out next year. I'm gonna get that damn trophy. I'm gonna up my booth, up my demonstration.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I feel like I won that award this weekend because it was, I guess, Thursday. I went up Friday evening, was there Saturday, Sunday. So I guess it was Thursday. I got a call from the guy that runs the living history portion of it. He's part of the CF Ground Forces. So he's been working with him for years. He reached out to me and he said, hey, man, he said, could you do me a favor? Channel or not. He didn't even tell me a channel. He just said, the CF is going to do like an interview with somebody. Would you mind doing it for me Saturday morning?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, of course. I said, I'll be there, you know, by sunup. No big deal. And he said, I figured you've done this kind of stuff before, man. You'd be perfect. So, you know, appreciate us. Yeah, sure. And he said, well, just, you know, call a contact with the CAF. And she's trying to get this thing hammered out. And I'm saying, okay. What I envisioned was when everybody's set up, they're going to take some footage of what's going on with people milling around. And they're going to pick somebody at their display to interview.
To do a little bit some B-roll.
Right. No, I found out that it was the Channel 8 News, the local Dallas news station.
Was
that
a
I
live
had to
shoot?
Go to the studio.
Oh, you had to go to studio. That's even better than a live shoot. I've done multiple live shoots. I've never done it in studio.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, like, yeah, is there any way you could be there like 8:45? And immediately I'm thinking, okay, I got to unload all these tables, get my whole display set up,
yeah,
and then go from the event to find wherever the heck the news studio is, which was down, like couldn't be any more downtown Dallas, right? So just picture a ball of yarn.
Spots.
Yeah, like that's what the roads look like. It's just roads everywhere. So naturally, we missed the turnoff like twice.
Oh.
One-way road, can't do that. You know, go to the next. Oh, it was nuts. I was there in plenty of time, but
that's good.
Really cool opportunity to talk for a few minutes, and I can send you the link.
Please
just
do.
Just to talk, absolutely, to talk a little bit about, of course, the event, you know, to represent the Commemorative Air Force. Naturally, I was in my pinks and greens, so to represent World War II reenacting, and then was given the opportunity to talk very briefly about my service and being a veteran and what it means and why we do this. Really, really special. So I was treated so well, and I always am with the CAF, but there were so many other people that had known my name that I didn't realize. Got a private tour of the nose art collection that belongs to the CAF.
Wow.
World's largest nose art collection. And then Sunday, and which was great. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And this is leading to more things. It looks like I'm going to be maybe potentially doing some video marketing or some kind of recruiting videos or
you
things
become
like
the
that
face for them?
For the, well, I don't know about that, but just to help with that, I there was quite a buzz about it, so we'll see where it leads.
Very cool.
But for me, the best payback was Sunday after Fifi's third flight. I got to ride with the guy that put this all together on a Klee track. I have only seen pictures of Klee tracks. I've never seen one in person, let alone one that was restored. To be up on this tractor with him, backing up. I mean, Fifi, this big B-29.
When you say Klee track, what are you referring to?
Okay, so it is the if you go look at early pictures on bomber bases, they would have these tracked vehicles as opposed to a moto tug. These were these big long tractors. I believe they were built by Cleveland Tractor. I think that's why I was shortened to Klee track. I couldn't tell you the nomenclature, but you'll see a lot of times they'll be pulling bomb, you know, bomb trailers behind them, or yeah, they'll be towing vehicles.
Kind of look like large John Deere lawn tractors.
Exactly. Yeah, just a big, huge track vehicle, long those inline motor. And so I got to ride up there on that. We backed up. The 29 came right up to us, hooked onto the tow bar, and towed this B-29, I'd say probably 200 feet or more, up to where it was going to be parked static for the rest of the day. Both wings are over top everybody in the crowd. I mean, it was what a massive aircraft. But to ride on that thing, pulling that B-29 in it, I've never been that close to a moving B-29, man. It was unbelievable.
I just typed the Klee track into YouTube. I'm not watching the video. You'll have to watch this later. Just listen to this description. Title, 1931 Klee track model 15 crawler. Okay, cool. In the town of Linden in North California lives William Beckhold and his son Bill, who own the largest Klee track collection with over 100 crawlers. This guy has 100 of them. I have to watch that video later, but yeah, it looks kind of like a larger, more medieval John Deere tractor for your yard. That's yeah. Cool. Very, very cool experience.
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly paid in full for any interview or anything like that. I mean, that was just super cool. So, plus the opportunity to take some photos inside of the B-24 and at the different battle stations, and just so much fun. Just talking with folks, having kids come out, explaining to them different things. Of course, big thing on my table that most kids really get a kick out of is my ball glove. You're like, that doesn't look anything like a baseball glove today. I'm like, yeah, because baseball gloves today are like this long.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like, they actually fold, where the old ones, you got to scoop and capture the right, ball. There's no closing the glove.
Right. So that's always fun. And just some of the personal effects, you know, of different things I've collected, you know, over the years. And I had a navigator display. I have pretty much almost everything that would be common in a navigator kit. That was set out with some maps, and then some of my survival gear, my new field desk, which was a lot of fun, and of course WLVN 1940s radio playing for folks. And it doesn't get any better than just hanging out under the wing of a 24, going back in time and keeping the history alive.
So a lot of living historians, depending on the event, they don't break character, they stick in character. And the event we had last week, it's more theatrical than historical because it's the way the Florida Museum raises their funds. They have basically two big events each year to raise their money to maintain their museum throughout the year. One of them, because as we've said before, they have about 5 to 6 miles of train track. They have a train that goes down at Christmas time. They do the North Pole Express. The kids get on at the train station. It's all Santa. It's all holiday out, and they get on the train. And when they get off down at the end of the line, it's all decorated, look like they just landed in North Pole. It's pretty cool. Well, for the World War II stuff, when you get on the main train place, you look like you're in France. There's a bunch of Germans walking around handing out passports. You got SS guys screaming at you, ushering you onto the train and this and that. It's a whole theatrical thing. But because I always do Ally, we have to bug out of the camp because it'd look dumb as hell to have Germans yelling at you and there's a bunch of Allies just walking around their camp. So we all have to get out of Dodge and literally go hang out down the end of the train track for 2 hours while they're, you know, doing their bit and getting people on the train and all that. And so when we choose who goes on the train, because obviously you can't overload the train at the end with a bunch of Allies, you know, when we have our little skirmish there on the train, a lot of the Allies get on the train as the train goes back, and once they get out of sight, everybody revives and gets piles in trucks and heads back down for the third stage. And so we try to tell the guys, hey, if you're going to get on the train, you have to interact, stay in character, you know, especially with all the politics stuff going on. We basically told them if anybody brings up the Israel stuff, just you're 1944. You have no idea what any of that means. You just look at them confused and just stay in character. Well, when I was at the end of the line, waiting the 2 hours, hour and a half or whatever for us to do our part, I was telling some of the guys, like, you know, last year there's this guy here who has a YouTube channel. He has autism. He travels around Florida, goes to museums and different stuff. His name's Joey. And I had never seen the performance at the beginning of the train station. I just thought they, you know, there's a whole thing with stamping passports, getting screamed at. And I didn't know it until I saw the video from last year, because he filmed it and put it up on YouTube, and you can see me at the end of it. And it was really cool to see what the Germans do before we get on the train. And so it's the second ride of Saturday, because we do two rides on Saturday and the one on Sunday. And I'm on the train a lot more this year because I got to see what happens on the train, because Art, who was handing off the event to Paul and I and Robert, he's on the train doing a lot of the speech. And basically what they do, some of the train cars are longer. They're open air, so they're louder. And so they'll have a speech about, you know, the current events, what's going on the train, and they'll travel down. And if it's a longer train, they'll basically give the same speech twice on the train and then go down. And as you would, because obviously you can't tell a five-part story, because each train car would only hear one part of it. And so they don't know you're repeating it. And so we're going down, and then I see Joey's on the train again. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to break character. And I went up and sat down next to him. I said, hey, and I had to call kind of loud because it's open air. I was like, I just want to tell you, I've been doing this event for 5 years. Never knew what happened at the train station. I was telling the guys, hey, if you want to see what happens at the train station, you got to go watch this guy Joey's World YouTube channel. And he was there, and he was like ecstatic that, you know, how cool it is. You know, he's just going around shooting his, you know, he's probably in his 40s. Like I said, he's autistic, has a caretaker, the whole nine, go around all these cool little museums and stuff. And you know how cool it is when someone recognizes you out in public. But to be at the event and then one of the reenactors recognized you because of the video you did of that event, it made his day. And so I broke character for that, and then went up to one of the other guys. I was like, you know that guy's video I was talking about? I was like, he's back on the train. Go say hi to him. So he went back there and said hi to him, just lit the guys, excited the hell out of him. So it was cool to see him back on the train the following year because he enjoyed it so much. And to see them shoot more video to help, because that's just more – that's just more getting eyes. And not only is it getting people's eyes on the event, but it's more authentic when it comes from a neutral source. It's one thing when the organizers put on something because it's going to be shot to make it look great. But when a neutral source is there, someone who's just there as a civilian to interact and to consume the event as it's presented, and it comes off fun and exciting, that's even better for the event, because that shows, hey, this is an authentic, enjoyable experience and not something that, you know, we paid some production company to put some video together to get you to come down here. So it's always cool when you see someone coming back a following year to shoot more video because they enjoy it so much. And so it's like, you know what, it's going to be worth breaking characters to tell this guy how much, you know, it meant to us that he's out there again. So that was fun.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, you know, you have to do it. Especially an event like that. We tell the guys, look, it's like a murder mystery dinner train without the dinner and the murder mystery. It's World War II, but interact. If you ever dreamt of being a comedian or doing some improv, this is a full weekend of improvisation. So get your best improv skills out and go for it. It's a good time. So we're excited to see where that goes next year. Real quick, I don't know if you guys can tell. We always forget until it's too late. It's November. I'm wearing my original WTSP Christmas Story adjacent shirt. It has wrapping paper at the top, has a picture of M1 Garand, and it says, "Dear Santa, all I want for Christmas is an official Springfield Armory M1 rifle, semi-automatic, chambered in .30-06 with a cherry," sorry, I'm reading upside down. I made this 5 years ago. "Cherry stock and complete with 8-round M-block. Love, Ralphie." And so if you guys want to share your love for World War II during holiday season, head over to WTSPWorldWar2.com and get your official M1 Garand instead of the Red Ryder BB gun, because we all know that Ralphie truly wanted an M1. He just didn't know it. And so you can get yourself the official WTSP Ralphie M1 Garand t-shirt, as well as some of our other shirts. Just head over to WTSPWorldWar2.com, click on the merch link, and use the promo code ILISTEN, and that'll save you a couple bucks on your purchase. Another reminder, do you have your print nearby? And while Jeff slides over to get his print, if it's nearby, he wants to remind you to purchase the official Jeff Kopp set of WTSP World War II coffee mug in all its glory. They're durable, they're strong, they keep your coffee nice and hot. And after you purchase your t-shirt and your WTSP World War II coffee mug, on our website, click on the link for the Patreon. Sign up for Patreon. We're doing the first giveaway in November. We'll probably do another one in January. And you'll see the print that, not the exact print, but the same version of the print we're giving away. It's called Hit the Beach. It's part of the Valor Studios. These were from the, you know, Henry Sludge collection. They've been sitting in his office for years, and he's donated two of them. That's the copy of the one we're giving away at the end of November. And all you have to do is be a active subscriber on our Patreon, not the free account, but any of the paid tiers, even the $1.50 a month. So sign up, cost you $1.50 a month. Your name will be actively registered. And so at the end of November, probably maybe December 1st, give everybody time to get signed up. We're going to go through our list of active subscribers. I'm going to send them over to Jeff. He'll cut them in a piece of paper, and we'll make one of his kids pick the name so you guys can't be mad at us because we won't be guilty of picking the name. And we'll give away the first one, and then we'll probably give away the second one at the end of December or maybe January-ish. We want to give everybody time to sign up. All you have to do is go to WTSPWorldWar2.com, click on that Patreon link, sign up and subscribe, or just go to Patreon.com and look for Digital 410. And appreciate you guys for all the help on that. And we have a lot more t-shirts on there as well. So this weekend I went to Tampa for my friend's bachelor party, which is ironic because three people canceled. So the three of us who went are all avid bass fishermen. And our original idea was to do a fishing trip, but we had to cancel the fishing trip because the three other dudes didn't like to fish. And so we ended up having to get like a Airbnb in downtown Tampa. But then those three guys didn't show up, so we could have went and had our fishing trip anyhow. But I bring all that up to say this. It's interesting. Tampa has the super high famous Skyway Bridge. It's a beautiful bridge, wicked tall. And next to it, they have the old causeway from the old Skyway Bridge that they've left a good section of it, maybe about 4 miles. And I dubbed it kind of like city parking. You pay $4 a person, you drive your car out there, and then you park. And then where you park is where you fish. So you can set up a... get like the tent canopy you have for when you go watch your kid's soccer game on Sunday or whatever, set up or the bed of your truck and have all your gear. And they have a 24-hour bait shop, 24-hour bathroom. So you can like literally pay, you know, $18 for a car full of people. And if you got a grill and coolers, you could camp out there all weekend and have a good time. But, and I put a TikTok up of it, and for Veterans Day, they lit up, they put all the LED lights underneath the Tampa Bay Skyway Bridge. The street was all blue, and then every other pillar was red and white, so it looked like a giant American flag. And it was, the video does not do it justice. The quality of LED lights, I mean,